Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the first episode, a conversation with Dean Susan Fournier, where she answers the question at the heart of the show.
A gubernatorial bill signing. You know how the playbook goes.
This is House Bill 2475.
It goes a lot like this one. It's from this summer, July 27th, to be exact. Oregon Governor Kate Brown signed a suite of clean energy bills. She sat at a table, adorned with a fancy cloth. She was surrounded by grateful constituents.
I got a nice pen, so I'm going to do each letter with a pen. So you all are going to have to fight over the pens.
They cheer. The governor gives a little speech, usually in front of a thematic and photogenic backdrop. On this day, Governor Brown stood in front of a huge, all-electric Freightliner semi-truck. It was kind of a cool touch.
Good morning, everyone. I'm just delighted to see so many smiling faces without masks, at least for the time being.
Then there's the checklist for any triumphant legislative speech. Name-check key legislators.
These two were absolutely instrumental in bringing these bills over the finish line, so let's give them a round of applause.
Thank civic groups and corporations.
Thank you, Daimler. Thank you, PGE.
Hit the party talking points.
That a normal built on structures of white supremacy caused incredible harm. I'm committed to putting equity and justice at the center of decision-making so that we can build a safer, stronger, and better Oregon for everyone.
Okay, you get the picture, because you've seen it all a million times before. Lots of pomp and photo ops when a governor wants to draw attention to a win for her party's priorities, as Governor Kate Brown did for those Oregon climate bills on July 27th. Well, exactly 13 days before that, on July 14th, Governor Brown signed another bill. It had to do with education, a pretty significant Democratic Party priority. But we can't play a soundbite from her speech, or any cheering, or even share a picture with you of that bill signing, because the pump, the celebration, exactly nada. No signing ceremony, no press release from her office, no speech, no celebration. This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and of course, you're wondering why a Democratic governor in a state run by a Democratic legislature wouldn't say anything about an education bill that in normal circumstances would be a big Democratic talking point. Truth is, this new state law has a complex story, one that's been oversimplified, politicized, and Twitterified in the 2 months since Brown signed it. Plus ça change in American media and politics. Oregon's new law is about high school graduation requirements. So let's go back in time and start with the question at the heart of this bill. What should high schoolers have to do in order to prove they're ready to graduate? In the mid-2000s, the Oregon State Board of Education thought it had a good answer to that question. They called it essential skills.
And so the thinking was, we're going to guarantee that all students have these, quote, essential skills. The three they decided to measure and therefore that you actually had to demonstrate were reading, writing, and mathematics.
Betsy Hammond is editor at the Oregonian newspaper, where she oversees education and Portland City Hall coverage. She says the state board defined essential skills as the foundational skills that all students would need to be successful in college, work, and life. Grades were no longer going to be good enough. As of 2008, Oregon high school students would have to demonstrate proficiency in these skills in order to get that diploma. Here's the kicker. It was up to districts and local school boards to determine how they'd assess and measure those skills. They could use Oregon's state standardized test, or a variety of other standardized tests, or they could have students submit work samples.
Work sample was supposed to be like something you would do in class, only kind of on steroids.
State standards, local control, 21st century skills.
These essential skills were designed to be demonstrated through projects, portfolios, work-study kinds of experiences, you know, really to show not only that one had book learning, but that one could use the learning that one had achieved.
To anyone interested in education, this all sounds like the Holy Grail. And Oregon thought it had nailed it. The requirement would lead to real-world, meaningful learning experiences for Oregon kids. You just heard State Senator Michael Dembro at a public hearing earlier this year. Dembro became chair of the state legislature's Education Committee in 2020.
That's when I learned that the essential skills had essentially devolved into a score on a standardized test.
The promise of real-world application, collaborative projects, and work-study experiences had not happened, at scale at least. In most schools, students sat for a test. And if they didn't pass that test, the race was on to get that student to demonstrate proficiency before graduation day. Otherwise, no diploma. Sometimes that meant students had to take a separate class that focused solely on passing the essential skills requirement. Fast forward to 2021, this year. For the past 2 years, Oregon suspended that essential skills requirement due to COVID, of course, and the disruption the pandemic has caused in schools. Some state legislators, including Lou Frederick, thought it was the perfect opportunity to shelve the essential skills test and find a better way to assess graduation readiness. Frederick is also a former educator himself, and he told Portland Station KGW the tests weren't helping anyone, schools, families, or students.
They didn't get the results of the test back. The teachers didn't get the results of the test back until the next year started. So who was using it? It was primarily a statistical situation. It was not so that you could say to a child, you're not learning your fractions. We need to teach you to learn your fractions. It was saying, we've got a group of students who may not have learned their fractions. That's all.
Other Oregonians disagree.
If you take some of these independent measures away, what measure do you have left? Well, you have grades.
Patrick Burke, professor of education at Portland State University, also spoke to KGW.
What we know about grades, in addition to how they fluctuate from teacher to teacher, is they set a minimum bar. If I only have grades, I can graduate from high school with nothing but a D. Is that in the best interest of the state of Oregon? Is it in the best interest of the 350,000 students that we serve to say that all we expect of you is a D?
Well, the state legislature passed that bill that suspends the essential skills requirement for the next 3 school years. And you'd think that a progressive governor would shout from the mountaintop anytime she signed a bill striking at the heart of statewide testing. But as we said at the top of the show, Governor Kate Brown signed the bill with no public fanfare on July 14th. So again, what is going on in Oregon? And more importantly, are we any closer to answering that initial critical question? What should high schoolers have to do in order to prove they're ready to graduate? Well, joining us now is Betsy Hammond, education and politics editor for The Oregonian, and she's with us from Portland. Betsy, welcome.
Hello.
Well, first, let's dispense with this mystery over why Governor Brown signed this bill kind of quietly on July 14th. Now that it's been a couple of months, do we have a better sense as to, you know, why she didn't have that typical playbook, as I said at the top, for announcing a big legislative win?
She does not hold signing ceremonies and issue press releases for lots of bills that she signs. She picks ones that are her personal priorities, and this wasn't one of them. In addition, she's done this before. She recognizes the tension. She signed this bill. It pleases teachers' union. It pleases the critics of standardized testing, of whom there are so many in Oregon. But on the flip side, as some of your prior speakers have said, by not having that accountability measure by not making public how many students are needing extra work at the end of their high school career before they can show the level of writing and math skills, minimal level of writing and math skills that they need to do well after high school graduation. It relieves pressure in the system on grownups to do better for the students who are at risk of graduating without those skills. And they are disproportionately students of color, students learning English as a second language, students in poverty, students with disabilities. And the governor recognizes that, and that is not a point of pride for her.
Ah, interesting. Okay. Well, the editorial board at the Oregonian actually publicly had urged Governor Brown to veto the bill. Can you talk a little bit about why the editorial side of the paper came out on that?
I have to admit, I'm not very familiar with their thinking on that, and I really can't speak to that. I do know that in the past, when she signed a bill to very controversial bill that Oregon actively notifies all parents they can exempt their students from standardized testing. At that time, the editorial board's thinking was that those accountability measures serve to put pressure on the system. They expose the fact that students of color continue to be very poorly served by the schools. And at that time, their thinking was that by exempting a lot of students from testing, the results wouldn't be reliable and those inequities would be made less visible. So I'm thinking that probably the rationale was similar in this case.
Okay. Well, we have to take a quick break here, Betsy. So I'm going to ask you to hang on. And when we come back, we're going to dig into more about what testing in Oregon has looked like, what it was supposed to accomplish, what it didn't, and really the next steps that the state might take with what I still consider to be rather a bold change when it comes to the requirements for Oregon high schoolers and what they need to prove to graduate. Betsy Hammond joins us today. She's education and politics editor for the Oregonian newspaper. We'll be back with a lot more. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken?, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. These days, it's hard to ignore the debate over the role business should play in society.
There's crescendo around profit, period. Is profit bad? Is capitalism evil? These themes are out there.
Is this criticism of business warranted? And if so, how do we fix it? Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the first episode of the Is Business Broken podcast.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. And today we're talking about what should a high school student know and be able to do and be able to prove in order to graduate. And we're asking that question again, all over again, because Oregon this summer made some pretty significant changes, at least for the next couple of years, on what high schoolers should be able to show they know, or how they should be able to show it, I should say, in order to get their diploma. And Betsy Hammond joins us today. She's education and politics editor for the Oregonian newspaper. And Betsy, before we sort of get into the nitty-gritty of what the new law has changed, can you just take us back a little bit and describe to us, you know, in most schools, or especially in schools that you visited, how did this essential skills test work? How did it work?
Well, I was very curious to see that myself, Meghna. I covered the State Board of Education back in 2007 and 2008 when they made the decision to impose this requirement. At the time, they were pretty late to the party. We were the 27th or 28th state to impose a graduation test. And the folks in Oregon were at pains to say, let's not make it a test. A test is one option. They allowed for all kinds of tests. You could show it by the PSAT, the ACT, the SAT, the state standardized test, which at the time was called OAKS. We've now switched to Smarter Balanced, the Armed Forces Entry Test. But they also created something very special, which was this idea of a work sample. So the idea was that you could, rather than take a standardized test, you could do something like what you would do in class to show that you could read text, to show that you could write proficiently, and to show that you could use math in a real-world application. And they decided incredibly that that wasn't something you were going to have to mail into the Oregon Department of Education. Your own teacher, using a rubric set by the state, mm-hmm. could look at what you had produced and decide, does this show the required level of writing skill? Does this show the mastery of mathematics? And these standards were set at freshman or sophomore year of high school. And so I too wondered, what's going to happen? Well, what happened is, as at the time, under No Child Left Behind, all students were required to take a standardized test in 10th grade anyway. And most students at that point showed the proficiency. Most students in Oregon could already in their sophomore year read, write, and do math at the level required for graduation. So they simply ticked off, they'd taken the test, done. But it turned out that about 10% of students in reading, but far more students in math and writing, about 25%, couldn't demonstrate that proficiency mm-hmm. on standardized tests. So the schools, the idea was that the original thinking at the State Board was that schools would up all their regular classes so that they would get students ready. Instead, what happened in high school after high school after high school is they created a special class, a smaller class than normal. It was often called a workshop class. And so that was to get students to kind of coach them through, here are those skills, we'll give them to you, and here's how you would demonstrate them. And so I visited some of these workshop classes, and I thought they would be pretty grim, but the ones I visited weren't. In particular, I can remember visiting an Oregon City High School writing workshop, and I visited near the end of the semester, so students had gotten their act together. They laughed about how poor their writing skills were when they came in. They were, allowed me to look over their shoulder. Mm. They were writing these pretty interesting, compelling essays. They had to do narrative and explanatory, and the teacher had guided them to have the skills they needed so that when they would graduate, they could write, again, not as well as you can probably, but at the level that was going to allow them to enter community college and not have to pay for non-credit remedial classes. They were ready for that freshman community college experience, and it was going to help them on the job and in life. So again, yeah. That's what happened is that schools were forced to, they may have had to make their other classes slightly bigger. And mm-hmm. it was a scheduling nightmare to get those small classes and get students into those classes to prepare them and to actually have the skills.
Okay. So Betsy, hang on here for a second, because that's a really interesting sort of journey into how this was actually working on the ground in Oregon high schools. And full disclosure, I wouldn't consider myself a great writer. I'm decent at it, but it's actually because of the teachers I had in my high school in Oregon, where I graduated from ages ago. But hang on here for just a second, Betsy, because now I want to bring in Michael Dembro. He is a Democratic state senator and also the chair of the Senate Education Committee in the Oregon legislature. And he joins us from Portland. So, Senator Dembro, welcome.
Hello, Mina.
Okay, so now you heard Betsy sort of describe how it was working, the essential skills requirement or high schools helping that small fraction of students meet those requirements. So what exactly then does this new law do? What is it functionally changing for Oregon students?
Well, actually, it really doesn't change anything for now. What it does is it takes advantage of the fact that the essential skills requirement has been suspended. It was suspended last year because of COVID and is going to be suspended again this year. And it takes advantage of that pause to have the State Board of Education start looking at this requirement and see, is it doing what we had hoped it would back in 2008 when, as I think you mentioned, I was part of the State Board. I was a community college faculty representative on the board. And, you know, as Betsy mentioned, at that time, we had a very different vision of what the essential skills requirement would do. It would bring a kind of real-world ability to the process so that students would show not just a score on a test, but their ability, you know, to use math, to do writing in real-world situations, et cetera. And, you know, this year I took over as chair of the Senate Education Committee and learned that the essential skills requirement had been suspended. And I asked why that was, and that's because the Smarter Balance test had been suspended, again, because of COVID. Mm-hmm. And that really surprised me, you know, and that's when I came to learn that in almost all cases, three-fourths at least of the cases, the score on this standardized test was being used to show essential skills.
Yeah.
Which was so far from what we were hoping for back then, you know, as I think you heard from Betsy. And so that's what led to this bill. You know, there were, of course, people calling for the end of the essential skills requirement. And I said, no, let's send it back to the State Board, have them look at it, have them see, has this requirement been making a difference? Why are districts not sort of fulfilling the original vision, and let's come up with a way to, you know, if that's the case, let's try to make it work.
Okay.
And, well, and that's what this bill does.
Okay. So hang on for just 1 second, Senator, if you could. Betsy Hammond,
sure.
The timing of all this to me seems to, I just want to tease apart the threads here for a second, because you said a little earlier that at this time, that 2008 period, we also still had the juggernaut of No Child Left Behind, right? That required some kind of testing from states. I mean, isn't that part of the problem? That, of course, even though Oregon may have had really high hopes for a different kind of rubric, if I can just put it that way, it was just easier to say, well, for schools that are already rather overburdened, well, we'll just kind of use the tests that qualify for NCLB.
Right. And the fact that No Child Left Behind is gone,
right,
hasn't ended the requirement that students be tested in grades 3 through 8 and then once again in high school. And Oregon this year is being required to resume giving the Smarter Balance test. And again, the way it was set up in Oregon was that lots of tests. Students are continuing to take the PSAT, the ACT, and the SAT, and many students easily demonstrate that the required skill level on those tests to show that they have met the essential skills as currently defined. And I think it's naturally high time for the state to revisit essential skills, the way they're measured, what they're required. It's a very different era now than it was in 2008. And so those will be updated. The problem, the challenge is that because of the way Oregon sets the rules, which makes sense, which is when they set a new graduation requirement, they impose that on eighth graders. They don't say to students who've already started high school, surprise, here's what you got to do to get a diploma. And so what that means is that the very earliest that Oregon will set the new standards, that's more than just getting a D by your teacher's judgment in your class, but that would be something that would be a statewide vision and standard, would be for the class of 2027.
Okay. So that's really important to know. Can you hold that thought here for a second, Betsy? Because I am going to come back to that. That's really, really important. But Senator Dembrough, just briefly, again, I think education policy is such a thicket. It's kind of hard to understand sometimes and get clarity. So just how would you describe, what is the problem then right now that the bill, the law, is trying to solve?
Well, you know, as I said, I think that, you know, we have heard complaints that the essential skills has devolved into just, you know, score on a test and then busy work on the part of students, and that it is not really making a difference, you know, in terms of students' ability to use their knowledge in the real world. And so, you know, the bill is designed to call that question. And call on the state board to find out how is it working. If districts are not able to fulfill that original vision, which is to use, you know, teams of teachers to assess students' ability to, you know, to perform in the real world, okay, what are the impediments? What does the legislature need to do to help remove some of those barriers, maybe give the, you know, funding that's needed, et cetera? And, you know, that's the purpose of the bill. And, you know, I will say that, you know, we are looking for a pause that's a brief pause. And, you know, if this requires legislative action to make sure that any changes are implemented more quickly, like, you know, in a couple of years, we'll do that because, you know, I would agree we do not want to wait until 2027.
Right.
We will speed it up. I mean, that's something the legislature can do once there's agreement that this is the right course of action.
So Michael Dembrough and Betsy Hammond, hang on here for a second, because I do want to investigate a little more thoroughly the role that concerns about equity in education, those concerns and how they're playing out in this debate or discussion over the Oregon essential skills requirement. Because, of course, as you both know, there is a persistent and decades-long gap between standardized test scores, between groups of students correlated to things like race and income and English language proficiency or disability. And in fact, Governor Kate Brown's office, when it finally did talk about why she signed the bill, they released a statement saying, quote, "The law gives Oregon a chance to reimagine and rebuild our education system in a way that more equitably serves Oregon's Black, Latino, Latina, Latinx, Indigenous, Asian, Pacific Islander, tribal, and students of color," end quote. I mean, more specifically, there are many Oregon educators who say, well, the problem just isn't the test takers. It's not that. It's the test.
One way that it plays out is in our schools that are more white and affluent. It is assumed that most students will pass the standardized test the first time through. And the students who don't, it's much smaller scale of what interventions are needed, you know, how to create those opportunities. At schools that serve a majority of students of color, it tends to be a school-wide effort, which is built into the year through, you know, often weeks of lost instruction in order to create these opportunities.
Elizabeth Teal taught for years at Madison High School, now called McDaniel High School, in Portland, Oregon. She's currently the president of the Portland Association of Teachers, which is part of Oregon, the Oregon State Teachers Union. And the union, of course, is one of the groups that pushed hard for the suspension of the essential skills requirement. Now, McDaniel High is a racially and socially socioeconomically diverse school, and Teal has seen the impact of the requirement firsthand.
Kids are coming to school with enormous challenges, and the solutions to those challenges are not more testing. But I think that the bigger picture is it's like a false solution, right? Having an essential skills class does not create equity. It's just a way to keep on measuring something until you measure it different ways until you get the result you want.
Oregon State Representative Zach Hudson has been an educator for 15 years. He most recently was a special education math teacher at Reynolds High in Troutdale. He's also a Democratic state rep and helped push this bill through. And he says some of his students struggled to meet the requirements, which sometimes seemed arbitrary.
I could have a student who could answer the math question correctly and even show two different ways that answering it that way made sense, but could not write a step-by-step explanation of it. And, you know, largely, I mean, I had students with communication disabilities and learning disabilities like dyslexia. If I could have pointed a video camera at them and say, okay, talk me through this problem, they totally could have passed it, but they couldn't write the essay about it. And so, you know, I definitely felt conflicted there about, are we really asking our students to do something, you know, useful and meaningful for them? Or are we just... Are we trying to ask a fish to ride a bicycle?
Well, Betsy Hammond, let me turn back to you here. We've got a minute before our next break here. Are there some concerns that with the temporary suspension of these requirements, that kids who need some of the greatest supports, you know, the kids that you saw in those classes, may not actually get them now?
Yes, that is definitely the case, that those workshop classes, those intensive writing and math classes are disappearing and have disappeared. And I think you can hear diverse views on whether that's a good thing or a bad thing. You know, Representative Hudson there saying that he felt as a math teacher that trying to come up with that work sample was sort of punishing those students. I can say that I visited at McDaniel High, Elizabeth Beale School, some wonderful math workshop classes where students were very engaged and were getting additional math instruction. Mm. So,
well, Michael Dembro, I'll give you a chance to respond to that when we come back from our break. But we're trying to get a handle on an interesting change that Oregon made this summer when it thought it was high time to rethink what it means for high school students to be ready to graduate. So we'll have more when we come back. This is On Point.
Did you kill Marlene Johnson?
I think you're one of the first people to have actually asked.
From WBUR and ZSP Media, this is Beyond All Repair, a new podcast about an unsolved murder that will leave you questioning everything.
Somebody should be in jail for murdering my sister.
A woman who's never been believed.
As long as they think I have done this, then they're not looking for who actually did this.
And that's what makes it a cold case.
No, it's a botched case.
And a search for the truth, once and for all.
Wow, it just gets more interesting.
Beyond All Repair. Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts.
Be careful. You're digging in a place that's been very peaceful for a while.
Do it anyway. Dig.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Just a little peek into what we're going to be doing on Monday. We're going to be talking about the prospects for men and boys in this country. And the conversation is really triggered by some recent reporting and findings that college attendance rates for young men are dropping precipitously. And so we're going to explore the complexity around this issue and ask, are you a man or a boy heading into adulthood, a teen, who's starting to feel left behind? Let us know why. And if you're parenting a boy, what are you thinking about your boy's future as you raise him? Tell us your story at 617-353-0683. That's 617-353-0683. That's for Monday's show. Today, we are talking about what's been going on in the state of Oregon. They made an interesting decision this summer, and that is to temporarily suspend what was called the essential skills requirement. That was a test, or essentially a proficiency level, that high school students had to prove in order to get a diploma. And that leads to the bigger question of, how do we know? How can we best assess when high schoolers indeed are ready to graduate, when they have the abilities and the skills to be successful after they leave the 12th grade. I'm joined today by Betsy Hammond. She's education and politics editor for The Oregonian. And Michael Dembro joins us as well. He's a Democratic state senator and the chair of the Oregon Senate Education Committee. And Senator Dembro, before the break, we just talked briefly about some of the concerns that in this interim period, this next several years, that students who actually were benefiting from some of the supports they got due to the essential skills requirement may not get those supports. And I wanted to give you a chance to respond.
Yes. Well, you know, I'm sure that they will continue to get the supports that they need, you know, while this is being looked at. You know, I will say, you know, I want to go back to how you started talking about the governor's signature, quiet signature of this bill. And, you know, I will say the example that you gave of the energy bill. And, you know, what a wonderful event that was. I was at that event. I was very involved with that legislation, and it really was wonderful. And those kinds of signing ceremonies, which are, reserved for, really important sweeping areas of legislation, unfortunately came to an end right after that event because of COVID. We had to kind of shut down those in-person signings. But in no case would this bill have been, been the focus of such a public signing, because, you know, what it does is it just assigns work to the State Board of Education to examine a problem, try to come up, a perceived problem, see if it's a real problem, try to come up with improvements to the system. And that was an approach that was supported, by our, administrators, board, local board members, the teachers. I mean, everybody involved thought that was going to be a good idea. And I will add to that the equity groups. We were, approached by a coalition of 20 equity groups who asked us not to end the essential skills requirement, but to improve it, to let the state board make recommendations. And, they too obviously want to see all students succeed. And they wanted the graduation requirements in general to be looked at. How are things working for students with disabilities? What kind of diplomas are they getting? Are they good? So they wanted this to be part of a larger sort of look at what are our requirements? Are they really preparing students for success in the real world and in post-secondary education? And are the kids getting the kinds of support at all schools to be successful? That's the purpose of this bill. Unfortunately, it was politically hijacked and made notorious, for political reasons. And, the argument was that we're dumbing things down. That is not at all what we're doing. Mm. We're trying to go back to the original vision that education is not just about a score on a test. And that's why many universities, all of Oregon's universities are no longer, public universities are no longer requiring the SAT or the ACT, because there's a sense that those tests don't really tell us how well a student will do in school and in the real world.
So, Senator Dembro, if I may, I have covered education for a long time, and much of it based here in Massachusetts, where even the smallest move in the state legislature is not ever considered sausage making, essentially, as you described it. I mean, the education groups on whatever side of whatever divide you want to call suit up for war every time education comes up in the state legislature. Having grown up in Oregon myself, I know that it can be somewhat similar there. So I'm not quite convinced by your assertion that it was just, assigning the legislature more work. And that's why Governor Brown quietly, I'll still use that word, signed the bill, because it does seem to me that in the world of education, it being so fraught, that it is quite a statement for the state to say, no, we're going to pause this thing that we've had since 2008, and we are going to take a deep look at how we're really assessing student readiness for graduation. It's not a sausage making bill. It is a statement of some kind. And I don't really understand why the governor or others didn't come out and say that, you know, teachers, educators, professors, people for a long, long time have been saying we're being forced to teach to the skills requirement. We're not fulfilling what we want to do in the classroom. And this is a chance to put a pause on all that and do better by Oregon students.
Well, I can't speak for her or her communications people, but, you know, I'm just sharing with you what the reality of it was. If this program had not been in pause, and, you know, if there had not been just, you know, questions about its effectiveness and its departure from the original vision, then, you know, this bill would not have been, generated. I will say that, I did inherit a bill that would have ended the requirement permanently, and I rejected that because I still believe in that original vision.
Okay.
That, you know, we want students to graduate able to use the skills that they've learned, to have real world skills that they can apply, and to show through applied learning. We've seen a lot of success with students taking, what's called career and technical education courses. Kids who otherwise don't really do well on tests or do well in school generally, but once they can see the relevance of what they're learning, once they can apply it and see a path to success in their lives, then they flourish. And that's the vision that we had back in, 2008. And I think that vision still has merit, much more than a score on a standardized test. You know, back then we were also wrestling with the question of standardized testing because, we ended up adopting the Smarter Balance test. And one of the concerns back there was that these standardized tests would be used not as intended, that is, to look at how schools in general are doing, how programs are doing, but would be used to assess individual students or individual teachers, which is not what they were designed for.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how they were being, we learned that that's how they're being used for this essential skills requirement.
Yeah, no, point well taken.
It's a distortion. And it's wrong.
Yeah, point well taken, actually. And we had discussed that earlier. But Betsy Hammond, I still don't want to lose sight of this bigger question about, like, really, so how do we best assess student readiness? But I just wanted to give you a quick chance, Betsy, to respond to what Senator Dembrough has been saying.
Well, he's right on many points, but I was fairly infuriated at times listening to the testimony because it was so focused on the perceived evils and inaccuracies of standardized testing. And as the senator and I agree, 25% of students were not demonstrating proficiency on a standardized test. They were demonstrating proficiency by, for example, actually writing something that their teachers were coaching them on and their teachers were judging whether it met the rubric. And the interesting thing is that I feel like I should have mentioned earlier, virtually all the students manage to demonstrate the skills. I've tried to contact many Oregon school districts and find examples of students who met all the credit requirements but took that workshop class, and because they weren't able to demonstrate proficiency, that was the reason they weren't able to get a diploma. And those numbers are vanishingly small.
Mm.
So these workshop classes work. Yeah. Students who are mostly students of color, students learning English as a second language, students with disabilities, get this extra coaching, get these small intensive classes focused on helping them gain the math and writing skills they need and demonstrating that they have them. And almost all of them managed to do so.
Yeah.
Those classes have disappeared because that system has disappeared, mm-hmm. and it won't come back until it will come back better. I agree with the senator's vision. You know, it will come back better, but that would be for the class of 2027 or 2028. Because of the requirement that you give kids fair notice before they enter high school of what will be required of them.
So look, this all is continuously leading in the direction which I was hoping that we would go, which is how do we best help kids get ready for the rest of their lives when they leave the 12th grade? And obviously, is testing a way to do it is always going to be a question. So this is Michael McDonald, principal of Summit High School in Bend. And he says at Summit, there's a lot of testing already. State tests, college admissions tests, AP tests, makeup tests, whatever. You name it, someone's taking it.
Every time they're testing, they're getting pulled out of a class. So if they don't meet, then we would test them again. And then they might go into an ACT test. That was an all-day event. And then they might spend a day or two or more testing for AP. We were losing, you know, we were missing kids. Teachers would write me and say, I don't even remember these kids' names practically. I mean, they were joking, of course, but it seemed like they were losing track of these kids because they were spending so much time in testing. It was hours and hours during the springtime.
So, of course, the question is, it's almost like 2008 all over again here. What is the better way? Well, David Connolly is a professor emeritus at the University of Oregon. He's done extensive research on assessments and consulted with the state board when they were developing the essential skills requirement there in Oregon. And he told us it was hard for him to see that most schools ended up choosing to administer a test rather than the original vision, those meaningful learning experiences for kids that did not rely on standardized testing.
From an assessment point of view, they're not really taking advantage of what you could do with a work samples. It's weird that schools complain, you know, loudly about how standardized assessment limits instruction, and then they all choose to use standardized assessment as their measure.
But creating in-depth work sample assessments isn't easy. It's actually pretty hard, but administering a standardized test is less hard. But Professor Connolly says he has ideas. There are many ideas about the direction Oregon could take when it comes to graduation requirements in the future.
So one of the things you want to watch for is a progression over time in that you want to see increasing sophistication of thinking. You want to see increasing motivation and engagement, goal setting. You want to see students planning for their future.
Students could also take surveys, he says, and growth could be tracked in those harder to measure areas like aspiration.
If you really looked at where students were in 9th grade versus 12th grade to see if their goals got any clearer, if their aspirations got any higher, if their plans were linked to their goals and aspirations, I mean, that's probably just as important as any, you know, particular academic course you take.
Okay, so Senator Dembro and Betsy Hammond, we've got 2 minutes left. I'm going to ask you both to sort of, I'll give you both a minute each here. What is it going to take, do you think, to get Oregon down that path that Professor Connolly described? Because I think that everyone is in agreement that having more meaningful assessments of student learning is the direction you want to go. And Senator Dembro, I'll start with you.
Well, first of all, let me say it was great to hear David Connolly. It took me back. And I still believe in his vision. And I think that there is interest in the state legislature in getting to that vision. You know, that was something we didn't have back in 2008 was, you know, commitment from the legislature to support the hard work that it would take to come up with, you know, meaningful assessments that would encourage students to get onto pathways to success. I think we can get there. I'm committed to it. And, you know, if more good comes out of this controversy as a result of that, then I'll be pleased.
Well, Betsy Hammond, you got the last minute here and the last word today.
Well, you know, David Connolly is a great resource. We're lucky to have him here in Oregon. Perhaps he will help guide this effort. At the same time, Oregon doesn't fully control the levers. ACT, SAT, advanced placement, those students are still going to continue to take those tests, whether they're required in Oregon or not, for variety of reasons about what they think will lead to their success in life and in college. And that testing is not going to end. Again, the measurement that was happening in Oregon, where real teachers were looking at samples of writing and math in classrooms by their own students and using that to judge for graduation, Oregon was kind of ahead of the pack in terms of looking to something other than testing. And that's going to be on pause. But hopefully, you know, there's a lot of smart people in Oregon. They will come up with something so that for that class of 2027 or class of 2028, there will be something even more sophisticated in terms of measuring attitudes and skills. Yeah. Before students are handed that wonderful diploma.
Well, Betsy Hammond, education and politics editor with the Oregonian, and Michael Dembro, Democratic state senator and chair of the Senate Education Committee in the Oregon Legislature. Thank you both so much for joining us. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. Listen on for a preview of one of the episodes featuring Susan Fournier, Alan Questrom Professor, and Dean.
So let's start this conversation with the title of the show, Is Business Broken? It's a provocative title and a question. Where did this come from? Why that question now?
We're in a big cultural moment where capitalism, business, market systems are really being scrutinized and debated, and the role of business with it. So I think the question is just on the table. It's on people's minds. It's in the news media. It's in conversations. I think there are growing voices, loud voices, especially among young people who seem increasingly to believe that business and maybe capitalism with it are harmful and create rather than solve problems for society. And what we do seem to hear are those loud voices, and they are very black and white. There are protagonists and the antagonists and the pros and the cons, and there's really no middle discussion. It's sort of like people for and against, and it's loud.
Right. For and against DEI, for instance, right? A battle at play.
Right.
The way you describe it and the way you describe the polarization, it makes it feel like very much of the digital age, right? It feels very much of today. Some of those arguments have been around, though, right? Is this criticism of business and this question, is business broken, is that a new question?
You are so right. It is not a new question. Schumpeter, he was a professor at Harvard, and he's also maybe one of the most influential political economists of the early 20th century. He called for the death of capitalism, the death of business, 100 years ago.
Okay. Wow.
And when he critiqued way back then, he said the very successes of capitalism would bring about its downfall because it would create values hostile to capitalism, and that this would particularly take hold among intellectuals who were critiquing. So there's a lot of that same kind of dynamic happening today, and that's 100 years old. But yeah, we've seen this kind of cultural fervor playbook many times in the past, often precipitated by big crises.
Find the full episode by searching for Is Business Broken wherever you listen to podcasts, and learn more about the Mehrotra Institute for Business, Markets, and Society at ibms.bu.edu.